All right, we're beginning here on the top of Yud Gimel Amud Aleph by the two dots. The Gemara here is bringing a Braita that already quoted before, and here it brings you the full extent of the Braita. Rashi noted before that the Braita had to be talking about a Bechor because of the continuation of the circumstances in the Braita. And here you get the full look at that Braita. It says, Gufa Umala Malba Hashem, Rabot Kodshim Kalim Shem Mimono, Divi Rabbi Yosef Glili. This is the part of the Braita that we've been discussing until now, which is that when it came to Hashem Gzeilot, we said that not only did that apply to Mamon of the Baalim, it also applies to Kodshim Kalim because of this Malo Mal Bashem. And so what does that mean, Bashem? Something that belongs to Hashem. That is Kodshim Kalim. To tell you that if someone was watching or taking care of the Kodshim Kalim of his friend, and then he denies ever having it, and later on admits to the fact that he really did have it, he has to pay Karen, V'chomesh, an additional fifth, and an Hashem Gzeilot. Despite the fact that it's Kodshim Kalim, that would otherwise seem to be Hekdesh, and not the Kechesh B'amito, that you're denying something to your friend. Nevertheless, Rabbi Yosef Glili says that Umala Mal Bashem comes to include Kodshim Kalim, that they do have a status of Mamon Balim, that they have the status of being as if they are owned literally by the Balim, and subject to the rules of Sham Gzeilot. But as I omer, there are both at the shlamim. It's not kodshim kalim in that more generic sense, but specifically shlamim. Abi Yosi ben Dustai omer, lo mar ben Azai, ele bebechor bilvad. When Ben Azai said this, he didn't mean shlamim, he only meant a bechor. So now the Gemara wants to understand this braita. Amamar, Ben Azai omer, there are both at the shlamim. He comes to include the shlamim. Le me'ute mai. What does that come to exclude? Meaning that the first statement in the Mishnah is Rabbi Yosef Glili's statement who says, Kodshim Kalim. Along comes Ben Azai and says, no, it's limited to Shlamim. Shlamim as opposed to what? So you have Kodshim Kalim include a group of Korbanot, Bechor, Maser, Shlamim. You have a group of Korbanot that are called Kodshim Kalim. And he comes and specifies Shlamim. We want to understand when he specifies Shlamim, what does he mean? Shlamim and not what? So now Gemara says, Ilay mele mute bechor, if it comes to exclude bechor, hashto. Uma shlamim shetu'unim smicha unisachim utnufat chazev v'shok. Shlamim, which are more of a full-fledged korban, and the fact that they require the balim to do smicha on the korban, and they require minchat nisachim, depending on the size of the animal, plosha esronim lapar, shnei esronim la'ayil, isaron la'keves, so there's a minchat nisachim that come with them. Utznufat chazev v'shok, the parts of the shlamim that go to the Kohen require a wave offering of the chazev and the shok of the right hind leg and the chest of the animal, those gifts, things that are gifted to the Kohen. Amart mamon balimu. Over there, he's saying that that shlamim belongs to the balim. Bechor mi bai. A bechor which lacks any of these trappings of a korban. It's clearly less of a korban than shlamim. Then certainly that should be deemed to be Mamon Balim. So then what is he excluding? Again, you have a limited number of items that are Kodshim Kalim. So he says, I'm saying Shlamim as opposed to Kodshim Kalim. The Gemara says, well, if it means Shlamim and not Bechor, that doesn't make so much sense. Because Shlamim has more trappings of a Korban than a Bechor, and yet he's calling that Mamon Balim. So certainly by Bechor, he's going to call that Mamon Balim. Rashi, based on the conclusion of the sugya yesterday, says that the bechor that we're speaking about here is a bechor chutz laretz, which is a case that the default status of the bechor is not mishulchan gvoa ka zochi, but rather that it is the mamon of the kohanim. Whereas the Rosh over here thinks that the Gemara is speaking even about a bechor in Eretz Yisrael, and the Gemara here thinks that these distinctions between shlamim and bechor are sufficient grounds to say that the bechor in Eretz Yisrael is Mamon Balim, and to avoid a lot of problems that come up in the Shita of Rashi, one of which is that the most obvious distinction is that a Bechor in Chutz Laretz is Lo Chazi L'Akrova. That would be a key difference between it and the Shlamim, and you wouldn't have to use any of these other items. And therefore, there are Rishonim who believe that this Sugya argues on the previous Sugya, and here we're talking about Bechor Be'eretz Yisrael. The truth is, to answer in favor of Rashi, why they didn't say that is because there might be an offsetting factor, which is even though they're not Chazila Krova in Chutz Laretz, they are Kadosh Mirechem. So those might be offsetting variables, and that's why the Gemara went to the alternate variables. El Amar Rabbi Yochanan, the Mute Maser, comes to exclude Maser Be'ema, which in essence, Maser Be'ema is even less, if you want to say, of a Korban than a Bechor, but it has this unusual piece to it, and that's why he's excluding it. Kedetanya, B'Bechor Ne'amar Lo Tifdeh. By the Bechor it says you may not redeem it. Nevertheless, V'Nimkar Tam Chai, U'Balmum Chai V'Shachut. If it's a Tam and still alive, you can sell it. The Kohen can sell it to another Kohen. U'Balmum, if it already has an Amum in it, he can sell it whether it's alive or whether it is Shachut, it's Shechted, already has meat. He can sell it with certain restrictions on the way that it's sold in order that it's not a Bizayon the Kodoshim. But nevertheless, you're allowed to monetize this Bechor. B'maser ne'amar, b'maser in the Pasuk at the end of B'chukutai, it says, Lo yivaker ben tov dara, lo yimirenu, im amer yimirenu vayu tumurato yekodesh, lo yigael. You may not redeem it there. So ne'amar lo yigael, ve'enu nimkar, lo chai, lo shachut, lo tam, v'lo ba'mum. Lo yigael here means not only lo tivdeh, but lo yigael. And we learn out lo yigael from here to charamim. And just like by charamim it says, lo yimacher v'lo yigael, so to over here by the maser be'ema, the lo yigael means you may not sell it and you may not redeem it. So that means that the restrictions are much tighter on maser be'ema than they are in Bechor. Bechor, you can't redeem it, but in three out of the four possibilities, you could sell it. As long as it's not a tam, that is shachut, which is problematic, because if it's a tam, it belongs to the mizbech, if you shecht it, then you've ruined it. So therefore, it would be worthless in that sense. But in the other three instances, you're able to sell it and monetize it. Maaser be'ema, on the other hand, you're not allowed to monetize whatsoever. You're not allowed to sell it, period. So that would be something that is differentiated within Kodshim Kalim. If I take these three different korbanot, and inside of Kodshim Kalim, I have Shlamim, I have Bechor, and I have Maaser. Along comes Ben Azai and says, I'm different than Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Rabbi Yossi Aglili says, all Kodshim Kalim are the Mamon Balim. Says, I say no, only Shlamim. What does it mean, only Shlamim? So we said, the Gemara says, only Shlamim means Shlamim, and of course, Bechor, looks like a Shlamim, so too, to the exclusion of Maser Be'ema. Why is Maser Be'ema different? Because you can't sell it. If you can't sell it, you can't monetize it, how do you call it Mamon Balim? Mamon Balim is something that I can realize the value of. By Maser Be'ema, that's just not the case. I can't realize the value in any way, and that's why it's excluded from being considered Mamon Balim. So that's the way that the Gemara explains the statement of Ben Azai in the Braita. Ravina matnila aseifa. Ravina, on the other hand, does this whole fancy footwork we just did on the seifa, on the last statement in the Braita. Abba Yossi ben Dustai omer lo amar Ben Azai elo bebechor bilvad. That Ben Azai only meant Bechor is considered to be Mamon Balim, nothing else. Demote mai. If you say Bechor is Mamon Balim as opposed to the Kodshim Kalim of Yossi Aglili, then what are you excluding? Ilay melamute shlamim. If you're saying it's coming to say shlamim is not hashdomah bechor shekadosh mirechem bechor, which is kadosh from the time it's born, from the moment it is brought into this world, mamonahu, and it's still called mamon balim according to this shlamim mibayit shlamim, which you're only mekadesh after it's been around for some time. That you need to tell me is considered to be mamon balim. Of course, it's mamon balim. So Rabbi Yochanan nemute maser comes to exclude the case of maser. Kedetanyo, based on the braita we just brought before, b'bechor ne'amar lo tifdeh, by b'chor it says you may not redeem it, b'nimkar, nevertheless, it's sold, tam chai, if it's a tam and it's alive, you can sell it to another kohen to wait for it to get a mum, u'ba'al mum, if it already has a mum in it, where it's already usable, and the kohen can eat it, then whether it's chai or shachud, you can sell it. The other end, b'maser ne'amar lo yigael, by the maser it says you may not redeem it, and again, we learn from the charamim that it says lo yimacher v'lo yigael, and therefore you can't sell it. Lo chai, lo shachut, lo tam, lo ba'mum. And therefore, what he came to exclude was the case of ma'aser. So here, the Gemara here is trying to explain the latter two statements in the Braita. The first statement in the Braita is clear. Rabbi Yossi Aglili says, Kodshim Kalim. Any Kodshim Kalim are considered to be Mamon Balim. Ben Azai comes to narrow the scope of that statement. In the first statement, Ben Azai says, the Rabot et Hashlamim. That it means shlamim. The Gemara then says, well, shlamim as opposed to what? Gemara says, well, shlamim and bechor in the same bucket, so it must be as opposed to maser, and that's what he's excluding. Then the Gemara says, well, we have Ravina who says it's on the latter piece, which is the last piece of the Mishnah, Abba Yossi ben Dustai omer, lomar ben Azai la bechor. Ben Azai only said this about a bechor. Again, the Gemara wants to know, bechor, what does that mean? So the Gemara says, well, bechor and shlamim are the same, or shlamim is a kal v'chomer from bechor. So of course he means Bechor and Shlamim are Mamon Balim. The thing he's excluding is Maser. The question is, this whole statement that we made, on which part of that Braita do we read it? Do we read that on the middle section when Ben Isaiah says the Rabot at the Shlamim? Or do we read it on the latter piece where he says Lomar Ben Isaiah B'Bechor Bilvad? So they're arguing about this whole framework that we set up here, which means to exclude Maaser. Do we say it on the middle piece when Ben Isaiah speaks, or when Abbi Yossi speaks in the name of Ben Isaiah? In either case, what they're saying is, differentiated from Yossi Aglili, Ben Isaiah believes that Shlamim and Bechor are considered to be Mamon Balim, but Maaser is not. Obviously, in this argument, you'd also have to differentiate within the two opinions in the latter half of the Braita. So depending which one you think these statements are on, the other one would include more or less. Gemara says, wait a minute. That last statement in the Mishnah says, Habu Bechor Bilvad Ka'amar. When Abbi Yossi ben Dusta Omer Lo Amar ben Azayla B'Bechor Bilvad, Bilvad means only and nothing else. The Gemara just concluded that Bechor Bilvad means Bechor and Shlamim are considered to be Mamon Balim, not Maaser. How do you include Shlamim if he said Bechor Bilvad? Gemara says, Kasha. That is a difficulty in explaining the Braita in that manner. It's not a definitive question where we would have to change the Pshat, but it's a difficult question that will possibly be answered or could be answered, but not in a way that is so satisfactory. So if you then go back and read the Braita without the explanation of Ravina, it would come out that Rabbi Yossi Aglili believes that Kodshim Kalim are Mamon Balim. Ben Azai would believe that Shlamim and Bechor are considered to be Mamon Balim and not Maaser. And then along comes Abbi Yossi ben Dustai and says, Bechor Bilvad, only Bechor is considered to be Mamon Balim, and that would be it. That would be the end. Again, according to Ravina, that last statement of Abbi Dustai, he rereads, but we just ran into a problem. The Gemara explained it that way. Nevertheless, it's not called a Tiyufta, it's only called a Kasha, which means that it's a strong question, but not an absolute refutation of that position. Now, here we have Rava Amar. As we know that if it doesn't say Amarova, that means we're not starting a new sugya, we're going back to the previous sugya. The previous sugya was, what does it mean in the Mishnah when it says, Nechasim she'en behem mi'ilah? When it says that these are possessions that don't have mi'ilah, the answer that we gave in yesterday's daf is that it means mi'ilah de'leit behu, they don't have mi'ilah, but they are kodesh. What is an example of something where you don't have mi'ilah, but they are kodesh? That's what the Gemara concluded, it's kodshim kalim, aliv de Rabbi Yossi Aglili. So Rabbi Yossi Aglili's position in Kodshim Kalim, that is Mamon Balim. So therefore it's Kodesh, it's Mamon Balim, but there is no Mi'ilah. That was the answer that Rabbi Yossi Aglili is the author of our Mishnah. Rava offers an alternative and says, Rava Amar, my nechasim she'en bahem Mi'ilah. What does it mean these are possessions without Mi'ilah? Nechasim she'en bahem din Mi'ilah. These are possessions that have no relevance to the din of Mi'ilah. Or in other words, my ninu, what are those? Dehejot, something that's not Kodesh. So he, in the end, goes back to the simplest way to say this, that nechasim she'en bahem mi'ilah simply means they're not kodesh. They're not something that has kedusha whatsoever. Gemara says, v'litnei dehejot. Well then, if that's all you mean to say, just say it straight out and say that these are nechasim shel hejot rather than nechasim she'en bahem mi'ilah. Why would you write it in a convoluted manner when you could just simply say that the nechasim shel hejot? Kasha, that is a difficulty over here with that explanation of Rava, and that's why before the Gemara was leaning towards saying that if it says Ein Ben Mi'ilah, it means no Mi'ilah, but yes Kodesh, and that would have to be according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili that says that Kodshim Kalim Ramamon Balim. So Amar Rabbi Abba, Shlamim Sheziku. So in a case where there's Shlamim that did damage, Gova Bim Bisaram, Veno Gova Me'imurehem. You can collect out of their flesh, but you may not collect out of their limbs or the fats that end up on the Mizbeach. Meaning that the Shlamim is divided up into parts. We know that it's called the Shlamim because it brings Shalom in many different ways. And that is because a portion of the Shlamim goes on the Mizbeach, a portion of the Shlamim goes to the Balim, and a portion goes to the Kohanim. So what Rabbi Ava is telling us is it's clear here that when we're talking about a Shlamim, that the only relevant part to talk about in terms of Mamon Balim is the basar, is the flesh of the animal. When you're speaking about the imurim, or the parts of the animal that are going to end up in the Mizbeach, you can't make those culpable, or you can't have be paid out of those items, because they just don't belong to the Baalim. Right? The Chazer Shok belongs to the Kohen, but that's a different Baalim. It doesn't become the Kohanim until you put it on the Mizbeach. Well, number two is that the Kohanim are regular Baalim, like the regular Baalim. So if they do damage, they're equally responsible for the damage this animal does, and therefore you could collect out of that basar. It's an owner, but a different owner. It's not God, at least. It doesn't belong to the Mizbeach. So Gemara says, Pshita, what's the Chiddush over here? Emorim l'gvoa salki. What's the question? The Emorim belong to God. They're going on the Mizbeach. Why would you think that you can go ahead and collect out of these Emorim? No, that's not the case. The Gova Mibsaram Keneged Emorim. It's in order to collect from the flesh, Keneged Emorim, vis-a-vis the Emorim themselves. So, for instance, just make it easy. You have an animal that is worth 200 zuz. 100 of the animal is the Emorim, and 100 is the basar, is the flesh. So now, when I come to look at the damage that the animal did, the animal is a tam, and it does damage. When it does damage as a tam, we know that you pay chatzi nezek, you pay half of the nezek, mi gufo, out of the animal's guf itself, out of the value that the animal contains within itself. So this animal goes out and does damage, and let's say it does 200 zuz worth of damage. So in doing 200 zuz of damage, chatzi nezek would be 100 zuz. So there are two possibilities if you're how to view this. Either I could say, listen, it did 200 zuz of damage, the guy's culpable for 100. Let's look at the animal. The animal has a value of 100 in basar, 100 in emurim. There's 100 there that I could take. Let me take the basar. So that's one way to look at it, and you'd collect your full 100 out of the basar. So that's one way to view it. The other way to view it is say, wait, he did 200 zuz of damage. There's 100 that he gets to pay, but I have to look at the animal. Only half the animal is responsible over here. The animal itself, the shlamim, is made up of 100 emurim and 100 of basar. So that means that if I could only make him culpable for the basar part and not the emurim part, that means that there would be a cap on that because you cannot take from the emurim's part out of the basar. So the emurim's responsibility here is 50% of the responsibility. But the emurim are technically exempt because they are kochim. They belong to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. So the other 50% is the basar is on the hook. So now it did the damage of 200 zuz. Half of that's 100. So the emurim are responsible for 50. The basar is responsible for 50. So the only thing you can do is collect out of the basar 50 out of your 100. So that half that belongs to God is out of the picture. How out of the picture it is makes a difference over here. So that's what the statement of Rabbi Abba was. Shlamim she'eziku, this shlamim that did damage, goveh mebisaram, venu goveh me'emurim. He says you collect out of the basar of this animal, not the emurim. The Gemara says, pshita, why would you even think to take from the emurim? The emurim, l'gvah salke, they belong to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Lo tzricha, what's the explanation here? L'kova mibsaram keneged emurim. We don't let you collect out of the basar keneged emurim to the value that the emurim are responsible for. So that's the second way we explained it before, which is that even though the animal did 200 zuz of damage and there's 100 now that he is responsible for, and there is 100 worth of basar here, nevertheless, the basar is only responsible for half of that. The emurim are responsible for the other half. And if that's the case, the basar, you can only collect the 50 out of the basar. You can't collect the full 100 out of the basar, because that's taking value that the emurim are responsible for out of the basar. And that's the chiddush of Rabbi Abba, that we don't allow you to collect the value that the emurim are responsible for out of the basar side of it. So Ali ben Daman, according to whom is he making this statement? I Ali ben Rabbanan Pshita. It's according to Rabbanan Pshita, it's obvious that that's the case. Because they say when you can't collect from this guy, you can't go after the other guy. So what the Gemara here is referencing is a machloket that is further on in the Masechta between the Chachamim and Rabbi Natan. The case here is a case where a shor is walking along. He sees his other friend, the shor, and he says, this is too tempting. My friend, the shor, is standing right near a boar over there. And if I just go over there and give him a little hip check, he's going to end up in the boar. So sure enough, that's what he does. He comes by, gives him a little bump, and the shore ends up flat out in the boar down below. And the other shore is laughing. This is a tolda of Karen, because it's kavanah tolda azik. It's not done derech hilucha. He intentionally pushed the other shore into the boar. Who is responsible over here? You have two parties to the problem. You have a shore that did damage. You have a boar where it ended up in. So how do we look at this? The way that Rashi views this over here is that the Baal HaShor is completely liable over here. The Baal HaShor, the shore, did the damage. So therefore, since the Baal HaShor did the damage, he's completely responsible. Whatever deficit comes up after he pays, the Baal HaBor is not going to be responsible for. And that's the sheet of the Chachamim. That's what Rashi says. The Chachamim believe that the Baal HaShor is on the hook. Whatever the Baal HaShor pays, that's what he pays. The Baal HaBor is off the hook whatsoever. On the other hand, Rabbi Natan argues on the Chachamim and says that the Baal HaBor has to make up the deficit for what the Baal HaShor doesn't pay. So whatever the Baal, they're in a sense jointly liable, because he's going to say, what is my shore doing in your bore? My shore is in your bore. If my shore is in your bore, then you're responsible for it. Okay, the Baal HaShor, the other shore that knocked him in there, he paid this much. But whatever's left over, you've got to make up the differential. So that's the way that Rashi learns this. The machloka between the Chachamim and Rabbi Natan is who is responsible over here. The Chachamim look at it at the time of damage. The time of damage, the only guy involved was the Baal HaShor. He's the guy who knocked him down. And therefore, he's only getting payment out of the Baal HaShor. On the other hand, Rabbi Natan looks at it currently, what's the situation? I have a shore in the bore, stuck down in the bore, and that means that there's joint liability. And where the shore up top did some damage, the Baal HaBor did damage, and therefore the Baal HaBor is going to make up the differential, the deficit over here. All right, so that's what the Gemara says. The way Rashi is explaining it, Ielibi de Rabbanan Pshita, it's simple here. Ha'amrei, ki lekele shtumim mehai, lo mishtamim mehai. When the Baal HaShor doesn't make the payment, the Baal HaBor is not on the hook. So of course, over here too, when the Emurim can't make the payment, the basar of the animal doesn't make up the deficit for what the Emurim can't pay. Whereas, Ialibi de Rabbi Natan, according to Rabbi Natan, Ha'amar, ki lekele shtumim mehai, mishtamim mehai. When the Baal HaShor doesn't make the full amount, then you go after the Baal HaBor for the differential. Whatever the Baal HaShor puts in, the Baal HaBor is going to be responsible for the 100% minus whatever the Baal HaShor paid. So then in this case, why would you say the din is that you can't collect out of the basar for the Emurim? Because Rabbi Natan thinks you could. That if two people are jointly liable, and one party, if for some reason can't pay the full amount, the other party's on the hook for the remainder. So over here, the Emurim that don't pay anything, the basar should make up the differential. So that's the way that Rashi views the question. The Balei HaTosafot say that everybody agrees that they're jointly liable. Everybody agrees that the Baal HaShor and Baal HaBor basically are 50-50 on the hook over here. The only thing is that the Baal HaBor, according to the Rabbanan, has an exemption because of Gzeirat HaKatuv. The Gzeirat HaKatuv is that a bor, it says, V'nafal Shama, that you fell into the bor. So when is a Baal HaBor responsible? V'nafal Shama, when the object fell into the bor. This is not a case where it fell in. It was pushed into the bor. So therefore, the Chachamim say the Baal HaBor is off the hook. Rabbi Natan doesn't have that Gzeirat HaKatuv, and therefore he says that the Baal HaShor and the Baal HaBor are jointly liable, and since they're jointly liable, therefore he's got to make up the deficit, the Baal HaBor, that the Baal HaShor does not pay. So Rashi, again, thinks that, according to the Chachamim, the Baal HaBor is never in the picture at all, and it's only the Baal HaShor that is Chayav. And then, in the case of Rabbi Natan, he says, no, also the Baal HaBor is in the picture. On the other hand, for the Balei HaTosafot, even the Rabbanan agreed that they're jointly liable. It just happens to be that there's a Gzeirat HaKatuv that exempts the Baal HaBor, because it didn't fall in there, it was pushed in there. But that's Gzeirat HaKatuv. So had it not been for the Torah saying that, we would have made them jointly liable, even according to the Chachamim. But they have a Gzeirat HaKatuv that says, only B'nafal Shama, not anything else. Rabbi Natan doesn't subscribe to that Gzeirat HaKatuv, and therefore he says they are jointly liable. So therefore you have and Rashi describes the case over here, I'm not going into all the details, but there's a chance that the Baal HaShor over here could pay half, or there's a chance that he could be paying a quarter. If the Baal HaShor was a Mu'ad, and if he's a Mu'ad, then he's responsible for half the damage over here, he'd pay that 50%. The Baal HaBor has to make up the differential, he'll pay for 50%. And if the Baal HaShor, the Shor is a Tam, he only pays for Chatzi Nezek, so he'll pay 50% of his 50% of liability. That means he'll pay for 25% of the damage. The Baal HaBor will have to make up the differential and pay 75% of the damage. That's Rabbi Natan's opinion. So over here, the Gemara says, I don't understand. According to the Chachamim, the other party is not responsible to make up the deficit. That's the case. Then what Rabbi Abba says is Pshita. Of course, the Basar doesn't have to make up the deficit of the Emurim. On the other hand, if you hold like Rabbi Natan, where the other party who's liable makes up the deficit for the first party who can't make full payment, then why not over here do you say that the basar makes up for the emurim? The Gemara gives an answer for each party. Ibayitema Rabbi Natan, v'ibayitema Rabbanan. Some say that Rabbi Abba's chiddush is according to Rabbi Natan, and some say it's according to Rabbanan. Ibayitema Rabbanan, that the chiddush in the Rabbanan, hani mile betray gufe. That's when you're dealing with two independent entities. When you're dealing with a shor and a bor who did damage, over there the Chachamim say that one doesn't make up for the deficit of the other. Of al-bachad gufa, matzamerle, in a case where it's one single entity doing the damage, half basar, half emurim, amerle, mikol heichid debeina and mishtalmna. Wherever I can get the money from, I'm going to get it out of this animal. It doesn't really matter. So that's why we would have thought maybe the basar should have to cover everything. Rabbi Abba comes along and says, no, that the basar only covers its half, not the Emorim's responsibility. Some say that it's according to Rabbi Natan. Over there, the balashor. The balashor here means the one who has a dead shore, an injured shore in the boar. Says to the owner of the boar, Ana torai bebirach ashkachte. All I know is that my animal is in your boar. I don't know what happened before or afterwards, but I know that it's in there, and therefore you're responsible for it. My delightly lishtalmi meheich vishtalmi minach. What I can't get from whoever else caused the problem here, I'm going to go after you. Because the bottom line is, my shore is in your boar, and therefore you're liable for my shore. Okay, if I can make collections from the other company, like the other insurance company, then you won't have to pay that piece. But whatever I can't get, you're going to have to pay that differential. Aval hocho, over here, by the basar and emurim, mi amatzi amar basar azik emurim lo azik? Over here, how is he going to say, or how can you say here that the basar did damage, the emurim didn't do damage? I mean, so how can you say that the basar has more responsibility here than the emurim? Because in the case of the boar, the final situation is that I have a shore that's dead or damaged inside of the boar. So then he can say, he can basically hold the boar responsible and say, listen, this is the bottom line. He's in your boar. You are fully responsible. If we collect money from someone else, that's fine. But in the end, you're fully responsible. Over here, you can't say that to the basar. You can't say, you basar. Bottom line is, basar, you're on the hook for everything. What? It's just not true. The basar did damage, Emurim did damage, and there's equal liability here, and you can't blame it, you can't put all of the burden on one of those two sides. And therefore, the halacha here would be different than the case of boar and shore. In the case of boar and shore, you're right, you have two parties that were involved in the damaging, but the bottom line is that the bala boar is on the hook because the shore is inside of his boar. Over here, you can't say that the basar is on the hook in the bottom line because the basar didn't do anything different than the emurim. You're looking at equal liability where you can't say you at the bottom line are chayav for everything. Therefore, you'd come up with a different outcome here according to Rabbi Natan, which is what Rabbi Abba says, is you're not allowed to collect out the basar for the damage that the emurim did. Just a note here, there are three ways to formulate this sugya, which we will speak about when we get to this main sugya on Nun Gimel with Aleph. Rashi here, and Rashi further on in Nun Gimel actually give two different formulations, and then the Balei HaTosafot have a third formulation of that, and that is the liability of the parties here. One way to formulate it is that the Bala Shor and the Bala Bor are 100% liable for all the damage that is done, and now we're trying to figure out who is going to pay for what amount of that damage. Another way to formulate it is that the Bala Shor is liable for everything, and the Bala Bor is completely innocent over here, at least according to the Chachamim. That's the way Rashi actually formulates it on Daf Nun Gimel and Aleph. The other way to formulate it is to say that the Bala Shor and the Bala Bor are jointly liable. They each are 50% liable for the damage that's done here. And obviously that will make a difference as to how much the Bala Shor has to pay and how much the Bala Bor has to make up. And those differences or those tensions between the position of the Chachamim and Rabbi Natan will be affected by how you formulate it. I explained the Gemara according to Rashi's explanation here, which is that each party is 50% liable, unless you have that overriding factor, which we said before, Rabbi Natan is, that my shore is in your boar, and that makes you fully liable for everything that happened, unless you can find someone else to pay for a part of that damage. So, Amarava, Toda Sheezika. If a Toda does damage, Govabib Sarah, then you go after its flesh, veino govah mi lachma, but you can't go after the breads that go along with the korban todah. Right? Step back for a second. Didn't Rava, and we know this before, Rava explained our Mishnah as being a case of nechasim she'en bo mi'ilah, not according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili, but rather saying that that meant nechasim shel hejot. Means it wasn't kodesh, but it was lay people's shvarim, and that's what you're chayab for. So first of all, over here, Rava is also talking about a todah that does damage. Why should that matter at all? A Toda that does damage is not in the Parsha of Nizakim according to Rava. So you have to say one of two things here. Either Rava backed away from his position before because it was a Kasha. We asked the question on Rava's position, which was, he said, Nechasim Shein Behem Me'ilah means lay people's Shvarim. Bukhar says, then just write that. Nechasim Shel Hejot. So that was the Kasha we left on Rava. Question is, then after that, what did Rava think? So one possibility is Rava reversed his position. And the question caused them to say, okay, the Mishnah is Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Well, the Mishnah is Rabbi Yossi Galili. I can understand what Rabbi is asking now. I have a Toda, which is Koshim Kalim, which according to Rabbi Yossi Galili is Mamon Balim. And if it goes out and it does damage, you're going to be responsible for the damage it did. That's one way to explain this. Gemara, according to Rabbi, the other way to say is, and this is the way the Balei Tosfot would say is, Al Korcha Chaka Ari Le Rabbi Yossi Galili. That Rabbi maintained his opinion with regards to our Mishnah, but he's just saying, in the position of Rabbi Yossi Galili, what would be the din of a Toda? Yosef Galili believes that Kochim Kalim are Mamon Balim, and it goes out and does damage. What is the din here? Well, a Todah is a modified Shlamim. A Shlamim is a Korban that is brought with all the rules of a Shlamim. A Todah has the same rules as Shlamim. The one difference is that it has a shorter duration. You can only eat it for one day and one night, as opposed to a Shlamim, which is 2 days and one night. The additional item is it comes with 40 breads that come along with it. 30 of them matzot, 10 of them chametz that come along with it. So now this todah and goes out and does damage. So in terms of collecting from the todah, if you're mishtalimi gufo, if it's a tam that did damage and you're going after the owners to get payment here, the owners are only liable or responsible up to the value of the goof of the animal. What is the goof of the animal that is exposed to the liability over here? So the Gemara says, or Rava says, it's only the goof of the todah itself, not the lechem that comes along with it. The lechem that comes with it is separate, and you can't go collect out of that lechem in order to get your payment. The Gemara says, lechem shita. What do you mean? Of course. Why would you ever think to collect out of the lechem? The lechem is a separate entity. Why would you call that gufo? They're two different entities. Yes, they're part of a singular korban, but in terms of collection from the gufo, the lechem is a totally separate entity. The Gemara says, seifait strichole. We need it for the latter half there. Nizak ochel basar. Umitkaper mevi lechem. What's happening over here is you have a korban todah that did damage. Now, when the nizak, the one who was injured or damaged by this animal, comes to collect, he's going to get the basar of this korban todah. The fact that it's a korban todah doesn't change. It's still going to be a korban todah even after it did damage. So what's going to happen here is this korban todah is going to be brought to the mikdash, put on the mizbeach, and then when it comes to the dividing of the korban todah, then the basar, instead of going to the balim, the owners, is going to go to the nizak, the party was damaged. So now, who's responsible to bring the lechem? Who's responsible to bring the breads for this korban? Does the korban belong to the original owner, who is the one who is makdishit, and is going to get, quote-unquote, the kapara from it? Or is it the guy who's going to get the basar now? The nizak who's getting the basar, is he now responsible? So what the Gemara says is, nizak ochel basar. The party that was damaged is now going to get paid out of the goof of the todah. He'll eat the basar. Umit kaper. The one whose korban it is, he's got to bring the lechem. He's responsible for the lechem. Mar says, hanami pshita. Why would you think otherwise? Right. Why should the guy who's getting damaged all of a sudden be on the hook for the lechem? It doesn't make any sense. Maruteva came into lechem hechshera de zevachu. Now, I would have thought that because the lechem is part and parcel of the totality of the korban over here. So therefore, if you're the one with the basar, you should be the one who is bringing the lechem because it's part of the package that makes it that you're able to take the basar. So leimelei, atachalt basar, vanati lechem. You guys are going to say, you're eating all the meat here, I have to bring the bread? That doesn't make any sense. Kamash falan, the lechem, chiyuva devalimu, enochanami. Yes, that the lechem is the problem of the original owner or the person who was magdish the Kurban Todah. This guy never asked for a Kurban Todah. This guy never asked for the basar of a Kurban Todah. He ended up in a bad situation, so now he's collecting out of it. But that's not going to make him liable for the lechem. The original person who's Magdishin, who needs the kapara, has got to bring the lechem along with the Kurban, even though he will eat none of the basar that is associated with this Kurban. All right, so now the Mishnah says another one of the qualifications for Nezek over here, or to be culpable for Nezek, is they have to be Nechasim Shenshel B'nei Brit. They have to be possessions of Bnei Brit, which means those are the parties to the covenant. So when it says, Lemutei Mai, what does that come to exclude? Either Mutei Doveid Kochavim, it comes to exclude the case of Oid Kochavim, Haktani Lala Kaman. That is an explicit Mishnah on Daf Lamed Zayin. Shor Shal Yisrael, Shnagach Shor Shal Oveid Kochavim. You have a Shor of Yisrael that damages the Shor of Oveid Kochavim, Patur. He's Patur, you don't have to pay. So why do I need to tell me in this Mishnah information that's going to be explicitly given to you on Daf Lamed Zayin? I'm going to defer the discussion to there as to why that is. The Gemara there explains it, and then their Rishonim have a lot to say about that situation over there. But here the Gemara says, why do I need it twice? It says, Tanava Adar Mefarish. Here it's giving you the highlights. Here it's giving you the shorthand, which says that it's got to be Nechasim Shnei B'nei Brit. What does that mean? Later on, it gives you more detail about it. So yes, enochanami, it's coming to exclude an obi kochavim, and yes, that is explicit later on. But here, it's giving you the concise version of what the requirements are in order to be chayav for nezek. Nechasim miyuchadim, the Mishnah says that they have to be nechasim. We said in the Mishnah, the way that we explained it, is that they have to be owned items. That they can't be items that lack any ownership here in order for you to be culpable. The mutei mai. What does that come to exclude? Amar Yehuda, the mutei zeomer shorchai ezik. Zeomer shorchai ezik. You have two animals running after a single animal. So you have animal A and B that are chasing animal C. And A and B are looking at each other and say, A says, B, you did the damage. Your story did the damage. B says, no, A, you did the damage. So now they can't collect because it's a motzimi chavero alava raya. C, who's sure now is injured or has something wrong with it, who does he collect from? He can't collect from A. A says it was B. He can't collect from B because B says it was A. So therefore, that din of nechasim yuchadim means it has to be clear ownership or there has to be a clearly defined damager over here so that you can go collect out of them. Mar says, Hani Tani Lekaman, that's obvious in a Mishnah further on, Ayu Shnaim Rotfim Achar Echad, Zeomer Shorchai Zik, Zeomer Shorchai Zik, Shneim Turim. They're both exempt in that case. So if you're telling me that's what our Mishnah is telling me, we already have that later on in the Masechta, obvious, clear, that when it's a problem of Safek, we can't hold you culpable. That's what Gemara says, Tani Ve'odar Mefarish. Gemara says again, this is shorthand over here, later on there'll be more explication on it, and these are just giving you highlights of the upcoming Mishnayot, so it's giving you the concise form, and again, it gives the same answer. On the other hand, Matnita Tano, in a bright, a Tosefta here, says, Prat Nichse Hefke, the way that we explained in the Mishnah means, it's a difference between owned property and hefker. It says, hey, chidami, what's the case of hefker? Ilem et nagach tor didan l'tor de hefker. Your animal did damage to a wild animal or an animal that had no ownership. Mantobale. Who's going to make a claim against him? He doesn't have a claimant here to pay, so there's nothing to talk about. El et nagach tor de hefker l'tor didan. Now, the damage was done by the hefker shore to his shore. This wild animal or this unowned animal came and did damage. Go grab the animal that did the damage and then you monetize it for the value or whatever you need to be paid. If it's hefker, then you just get it and you can use it as a replacement or you can sell it off and get the money to make up for the damage. Somebody else stepped in between, which is that the animal was hefker, does damage. Someone else picks up the animal in between the time that your animal is damaged and the time you have to go and grab it to pay for the damage that was done. Someone else took possession of him, which they have the right to do. If it's hefker, they're allowed to take it. Now, are they responsible for the damage it did before? No, because it wasn't theirs at that time. Servina Amar, the mutei nagach, v'achar kach hekdish. I can have another version of this, which is the animal did damage, and then the owners were makdish the animal. Nagach, v'achar kach hefkir. Or the animal did damage, and then he was mafkir. He disowned the animal. So in all these cases, they were the balim at the time of the damage, but when it comes to the time of collection, they are no longer the owners of the animal, either because they were makdishit, they gave over to hekdesh, so you can no longer collect out of it, or it's a case where the balim disowned the animal, so therefore you can't go after them because they disowned the animal. Tanya Namiyochi, we have a brayta that supports this understanding im yuchadim. Yeter alkein amar Rabbi Yehuda, afilu nagach v'achar kehdish, nagach v'achar kehfkir, patur. He does damage, and then they're magdishir. He does damage, and then they're mafkirit. Then you are patur shenemar. V'u'ad bibalav v'emit ish. It was made, or it was deemed to be a mu'ad, v'emit ish, and then he kills someone. What the Gemara at this point is assuming is, is that the owners were warned, they meet each, and then he killed someone, until you have the killing that's done, and amad b'din shavim kechad, that they are equal in ownership. Wait a minute, it's only up to the time that you reach court that you have to have the same ownership. You don't have to have the gemar din, meaning the final psak, also be that way. Ah, sure yisakel. Puzzle again, that this sure is put to death. Sounds like gemar din udichtiv. That's talking about the final stages there. The only time you're going to be liable is if when it did the killing, and it ended up in court, and then sentence was handed down, it was found guilty, all of those have to be under the single ownership. Now Rashi takes this very literally and says it has to be a single owner across that whole period of time. meaning that it has to be the same owner from beginning to end in order to be liable. From Rashi, it sounds like if the guy sold it to another party, that would be enough of an exemption over here. Whereas many of the other Rishonim disagree with that and say, all you need is ownership. It doesn't have to be the same owner. All we're demanding over here is that it's owned by someone, not Hekdesh, not ownerless during this period of time. So according to them, if you sold it to another owner, that liability would carry across to the new owner and it would remain liable in that case. Yeah, from Rashi, it sounds like you have to literally have the exact same owner across the board. But according to other Rishonim, that's not the case. It's just you have to have an owner during that period of time. If you have an owner, then that's fine, as long as it's not Hekdesh and as long as it's not Hefker. Bali Tosafot point out over here, Pasuk that the Gemara is quoting is difficult and it's not probably what it really meant. It mentions the Pasuk, but it's probably not what it was looking for, because Hu'ad Bibalav is not talking about coming to court. Hu'ad Bibalav is the warning given to the Balim that your shor is now a problematic shor, which is Im shor nagachu mitmosh shom Hu'ad Bibalav lo yishmerenu. They meet Isho Isha, Ashor Yisakel, V'gam Balav Yumat. So Tosafot says that Vahuad B'Balav is nothing to do with the damage being done, but rather the warning that was given beforehand. So therefore, you look at Tosafot says, Nira Dalav Mi Vahuad Kadorish. Tai Vahuad Lo Ayri Be'idut, Shosin L'Saklo, Ki Im L'Ya'ado. El Mi Seifit Dekra Kadorish. The learning out of the latter half of the Pasuk. Dikhtiv, Ashor Yisakel, V'chein Mashma Lishna Deparich, V'ha Ashor Yisakel, B'Gmar Dinu Dikhtiv. So Tosafot says he thinks that they're focused on the latter part of the pasuk, which says they meet Isho Isha, which is the damage done. Hashor Yisakel. Shor Yisakel means it's going to be brought to court. V'gam Balav Yumat. So all of that has to be done under the auspices of the same owner. And so that's what it's meant here. That's the drush over here. Even though it brings V'huad B'Balav, which is the beginning of that pasuk, it doesn't literally mean that part of the pasuk, because that part of the pasuk is not really relevant to the discussion that we're having over here. So the Ravid, and it's also brought in the Sheet of Mikubetzet, in the name of the Rabbi Yonatan, say, the case here has to be a case where the animal's a tam, because you're collecting migufo. If you're collecting an aliyah from the property of the owners over here, then the fact that he's makdishit shouldn't make a difference, because the owner is responsible irrespective of where a collection out of the animal. But when it's a tam, and you're collecting out of the body of the tam, when you're makdish the animal, or you're makfir the animal, it has implications for the ability to collect from this animal. Because you can't go after the balim, you can only go after the goof of that animal. Whereas the Rashash over here believes that liability is only in a case of a shor mu'ad, and not in a shor tam. Because by a shor tam, where he's mishalemi gufo, then if you can't be makdish something that you don't own. So if the goof of the shor is on the hook for the damage, and then you're makdish it, you makdish something that doesn't belong to you. So there you would not be able to get rid of the liability. On the other hand, when you're talking about the ba'alim, that you need ownership is the determinant of the liability over here, that is true by a shor mu'ad. That's what the Rashash says, that shor mu'ad is determined by ownership, and therefore you're only liable if you are the owner of the shor. On the other hand, by a tam that's mishalemi gufo, your ability to disown yourself from the shor doesn't exist anymore, because the lien of the nizak encumbers the shor right away, because you have to be mishalemi gufo. In that case, your selling of it, you're being makdishit, you're disowning it, doesn't help, because the shor is already liable and encumbered to the nezek that's done. So that's a distinction that the Rashash makes. Obviously, you could argue against that and say that mi gufo means that that is the collateral, but it's not enough of a collateral that it blocks the ownership. And if you disown it, or if you're makdishit, then the guy's out of luck as well by the tam. Seemingly is the view of the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, who say that this case is ben bitam ben mimuad. But the Rashash believes that this case is all by a muad and not by a case of tam. And now the Gemara says, Chutz mirishuta miyuchedet lemazik. Except for the place that belongs to the mazik, this we explained in the Mishnah, is very easy to understand, that if you enter into someone else's property and then you get damaged, then damalei torcha b'shuti my bayi. The owner of the area can say, what's your shore doing on my property? In fact, did my shore damage your shore? Your shore didn't belong there. If it didn't belong there, it's your problem that it got damaged. Why'd your shore end up in my garden? He was in my garden, my shore hit him. If he didn't get in there, my shore wouldn't have bothered him. He didn't belong there. I'm not responsible for that. So that's an easy way to explain. The one is reshuta nizak v'mazik. If there is an area which is jointly owned by both the damager and the damagee, what's the story there? The Mishnah seemingly says that you are patur in that case, Because both of you have the right to be there. Since you both have the right to be there, you can expect, or you should have taken precautions that this damage didn't happen. And that's for both sides. They have to take those precautions. Amar Rav Chisda, Amar Rav Yimei, Chatzer HaShutafim, Chayav Baal HaShem VaRegel. When you're talking about a property that has joint ownership, where they both have to be have permission to be there, you are responsible for Shein and Regel. V'hachi kamar, chutz mirshut ha-miyuchedet ha-mazik, t'patur. The way to parse the Mishnah is this way. That in the case of Rishut HaMiyuchedet HaMazik, a place that is uniquely owned by the person who did damage, meaning it's his property and you entered there, you trespass, then he is patur. Rishut HaNizak VaMazik, you continue that with along with the next statement of the Mishnah, which is Rishut HaNizak Mazik, Kishikazik HaMazik. If you do if damage happens there, you are responsible for that damage. So that means that by the case of Shutafin, you're going to be Chayav on Shein and Regel, and that's how he parses the Mishnah, because he says, it says, ubir biste acher. It says that it does damage in another person's property. And that you have over here, you have a bir biste acher. It's not b'shut rabim. It's bir biste acher. It's somebody else's property. I mean, it's not solely yours. It belongs to you jointly. And therefore, someone else also has rights here. You're going to be chayab for shein and regel. So then, Rabbi Lazar amar, patur ala shein vela regel. No, shein and regel, you're not responsible for over there. Because he says, ubir biste acher. Literally means a third party's property. If you have any ownership in this property, or you have any right to be there, you're not responsible for Shein and Regel. That means in Rishut HaRabim, where you have the right to be there, you're not Chayav Shein and Regel. In the case of your joint property, you have permission to be there, you're not Chayav for Shein and Regel. When are you Chayav for Shein and Regel? Be'er b'stei acher. When it's a third party's property. How does he read the Mishnah? V'achi gamar. This is how he reads the Mishnah. Chutz mirishut ha-miyuchedet ha-mazik, u'rishut ha-nizak v'mazik namid patur. That when it's your property and something trespassed, or if it's your joint property, in both of those cases, you are patur. And then the last statement of the Mishnah is, kushizik chavamazik, that comes latuye keren. That comes to say that by keren, you are chayav. Meaning that the last statement that says that you were responsible for the damage done, what does that come to include? That comes to include keren. Where it says, this takes us back to earlier part of the perek, hanicha l'shmuel. That works well according to Shmuel. Shmuel said, maveh shein, shor is regel, in the arba vot that are mentioned in the Mishnah. Where do I get Karen from? Kishrazik, Chava Mazik. This additional statement in the second Mishnah, which is extraneous, that includes Karen. So for Rabbi Lazar, that works well if he holds like Shmuel. Elo the Rav, Damar Tana Shor, Bechol Milei de Shor. For Rav, who says that Shor in our Mishnah means Shein, Regel, Karen, and Maveh means Adam, then Kishrazik, Chava Mazik, what does that come to include? That extraneous statement. Okay, Chava Mazik, Latu Yemai. Tayatu Yehai de Tana Rabbanan. It comes to include this case. Comes to include the shomerim, that they are chayavim in this case. Shezika beima birshutam, if the animal does damage in their property, tam mishalem chatzi nezek, muad mishalem nezek shalem. Then the tam pays half nezek, the muad pays full nezek. Nifritza balayla, if it broke out at night, osha partzu alistin, or the listim came to plunder this area or to rob this guy and they opened up the gates in order to get in there and they left it open, the shore goes out. Biatstave zika, and it goes out and does damage. Patur. Then gets his pastor because he's an ones. See, he didn't know about it when it broke out at night. Or, and it was a case where he had set it up properly and some unusual event happened. Or some third party caused the problem by opening up the gate. So Amar Mar. So now let's go back and understand this brighta. How does this help us? What's the case here? Now, if Rav's going to include this in the Mishnah, what exactly is the scenario here that's different than any of the four cases mentioned before in the Mishnah? Shor bor maveh hever. Ilei me da'azkei Torah de mash'il le Torah de shoel. If it's the case that the shor of the mash'il, the shor of the lender here, damages the shor of the borrower, Lemalei, let him say, Ilu azik ba'alma, bayit lishlumeyat. You would be on the hook for this. Hash da azke the Torah didach, binan lishlume. Now that it damaged your shore, I'm gonna have to be responsible for it? Meaning that if this shore went out and did damage to anyone else, you, the shoel, the borrower, would be responsible for that damage. So now that that shore did damage to your own shore, now I should be responsible and not you? Doesn't make any sense. If the shore, my shore that you borrowed, did damage to a third party, you as the borrower would be responsible for it. So just because it did damage to your own shore, now it changes the liability? No, you as the shoel are responsible for its behavior. If it damages third parties or your own shore, in all those cases, you're responsible for it. Ela daske tor de shoel, la tor de mashil. It's the other way around. The borrower has another shor. The borrower's shor, his own shor, damages that of the mashil, the one of the lender. So he has a shor that he owns, and he's a shor that he borrowed. The shor that he owns damages the shor that he borrowed. Lemale, he says, if there's a third party came and damaged the shor, by the shulmei kulei tara, you now are on the hook for the entire shor. A shoel is chayav in everything, include onsin, chutz me meita machmat malacha. Shoel is on the hook for any damage that is done with the exception of the fact that it dies while doing its work because he borrowed it to do its work. So obviously there he's not doing anything that's irresponsible. He's not doing anything that's out of the ordinary. And therefore it's meita machmat malacha, he's patur. But in any other circumstance, the shoel is on the hook. So again here, if a third party's animal came and damaged the shor that he borrowed, the shoel would be on the hook for it for the entire amount of the money because he is a borrower and it doesn't matter how it happened, he'd have to pay it. Now he might be able to go after the one who did the damage, but he might be limited because it's a tam. Whatever it is, he can go after that party, but he is responsible to the owner, the one who lent him the shor, the full amount of the shor if it gets damaged. So hashta da azke tor didach, palganizka udushamali, all of a sudden because it's your own shor that did the damage, you're only going to pay me half the nezek because you say that's a short time. I only have to pay half nezek. That doesn't make any sense. So basically what the owner of the shor, the lender says over here is, if the shor was damaged by anyone else, you'd be responsible to me for the full amount of the shor. Now that your own shor did the damage, you should be less responsible for it and only have to pay me half the nezek. No, you're responsible for what you borrowed, period. Doesn't matter how it got damaged, you can figure out and square away with anyone else that does damage. But as far as me and you are concerned, you're responsible for the amount, whether it's your shore or someone else's shore that did the damage. So that can't be the explanation. The Gemara says, "Dolam daske torah de mashil the torah de shoel." It is a case where the shore of the mashil, the lender's shore, went ahead and did damage to the other guy's shore that was there. What's the case here? Shekibel alav shmirat gufo. The shoel, when he borrowed it, took responsibility for its well-being. He took responsibility that it won't be damaged, and I'll return it whole to you. Right. So he's responsible to make sure that nobody else damages this shor. What he did not accept upon himself is the responsibility of this shor that I borrow goes out and does damage. That I did not take responsibility for. If that's the case, when the animal goes ahead, this borrowed animal goes ahead and does damage, either to a third party, or to the borrower's shore itself, he does damage, then the alim of that shore are responsible because the shoel never took responsibility for that. Right. And that's the case. If you do damage, you are responsible. So Rav says that includes a case here of any of the shomrim. It's true. The reason the Gemara picks shoel as the example is because the shoel is the one who's chayav in the most circumstances except for the case of meita machmat lecha. So it's the easiest to explain. But there he says, since he did not take responsibility for the damage it does, the balim are still on the hook for that. Where it says, then what are you going to do with the latter half of the braita? Nifritza balaylo shepartzua listim biyatztave zika patur. That if that happened, then the borrower is patur. What do you mean? Why do you have to tell me he's patur? He never accepted responsibility for the damage it does. Of course he's patur. Habayom, but the implications from that latter braita are that during the day you would be responsible. Halo kibel alav shmirat nizachav. He never accepted responsibility for the damage that this animal is going to do. Why should it be on the hook for this? Hachikamar. Im kibel alav shmirat nizachav. You're missing the transition inside of the braita, which says that if he did accept full responsibility for the animal, which means not only to guard it against damage, but to guard it from doing damage, there still is an exemption when he is patur in that case because it's an onus. And because it's an onus, something that was totally out of his control, he is patur in that case. So even though a shoel normally is chayav for onsin, nevertheless over here, when it goes out and does damage in a circumstance that he could not control, then we can't make him responsible for the damage that it did. So over here, the shoel, as vis-a-vis the lender, he has full responsibility. But now the animal went out and did damage. The shoel took care of everything here. So as far as his responsibilities, he can hand back the shore to the lender because the shore is still intact. That shore did damage to someone else. Is he on the hook for that? The answer is no, because it was out of his control. When it's out of his control, you can't make him responsible for the nezik that it did. So as far as his responsibilities to the lender, he'll hand back the shore and say, here's your shore back. Nothing's wrong. As far as those people that were damaged by that shore, he's also not responsible because if he didn't watch it properly, then he is responsible. But here where he did everything that was in his control, and some crazy guys in the middle of the night come to rob his house and they break down the wall and they let the shore free, well, what is he supposed to do in that case? It's totally out of his control. So therefore he is patur. According to Rav, this case is what the Mishnah includes, that there are times where the lender of the shore will be responsible for the damage that it does to the borrower's shvarim because of the nature of their relationship, which is that the shoel only accepted responsibility for protecting this shore from being damaged, but he did not accept responsibility for the fact that it goes out and does damage. But then again, even if he did accept responsibility for the damage, he has other exemptions when it was out of his control. He did everything that he was supposed to protect it against doing damage. If it goes out and does damage now, can't hold him responsible if he did anything under his control. And so therefore he'll be patur in that case from the nezek that it does. But if the shore itself was damaged out of his control, he is responsible for that. Meaning that if the borrowed shore got damaged, even though it was out of his control, he will be responsible. But if that shore goes out and does damage and it's out of his control, he gave it the shmira that he was supposed to, and then that he will not be held liable for. Okay, we're going to stop here to 6 lines down on the top of Yudalid Amud Aleph.